From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The 109th Congress adjourned last weekend with a flurry of bills and tax breaks. That rush of activity capped one of the least productive and most partisan sessions in history. For a look back, we're joined by Melissa Harris-Lacewell, Associate Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Princeton University, and from NPR's New York Bureau, Robert George. He's an editorial writer with the New York Post, and he was also a senior writer for former House Speaker Newt Gingrich from 1995 to 1998. Welcome back to you both.
Thank you.
Good to be here. All right, thank you.
So for starters, let's say that you're a teacher and the 109th Congress was your student. What does the report card say and why? Robert first.
Generally speaking, I think it gets a big D. And in the areas where it doesn't get a D, it gets an incomplete. Anytime that you have three students, if you will, withdraw because of ethics violations or indictments or convictions, that's considered not good. The Republican majority didn't even do the baseline of what they're supposed to do, which is pass pass spending bills. They just decided to do a continuing resolution and leave that to the incoming a Democratic majority in January. So, I mean, I think on all counts, this was a, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, this was a very, very poor performance by the Congress.
Melissa, are you going to grade on a curve for these guys? What do you have for them?
Oh, well, I mean, on a curve, they'd be even lower. It struck me as a little bit of grade inflation there to call it a D. This is clearly an F. They failed to do maybe the single most basic thing, which is to reproduce itself for the next Congress. So, you know, after only 12 years of Republican control, and that may have seemed like a lot to people on the left, but compared to the length of time that the Democrats held the Congress, this is actually a pretty short ascendancy of the GOP. And in that time, sort of the original headway that may have been made on a GOP agenda was quickly lost, and they didn't even do the fundamental responsibility to their party, which was to get reelected.
Robert, do you think that the Republicans were ever as unified as they were made to be in aspects of the media and public discussion?
Well, I think that there's a certain amount of unity amongst the Republicans, I would say, coming out of the 2004 elections. And I think the unity started to fray over two issues, closer to the end, obviously, over Iraq. But even early on, I would actually point to something that that actually the president did that I think began to sow some of the seeds of discontent amongst Republicans, and that was his attempt to reform Social Security, which from my perspective as a conservative, I mean, I thought was something of a valid attempt, but he didn't even seem to want to put down a marker as to what kind of a reform would look like, just sort of leaving it to the Congress. And that allowed Democrats to poke at it and to sow divisions within the Republican Congress and within the administration. So things started there. By the end of the day, the Republicans were scurrying in 50 different directions.
Now, Melissa, while the Republicans collapsed as the session went on, the Democrats unified. Did they learn a valuable lesson from being the minority party for so long?
You know, that will remain to be seen when we bring on the 110th. You know, certainly the group of Democrats which helped the party to retake the House are substantially different from their senior colleagues who will be heading the committees. Older, safer, many African-American congresspersons who will now be taking on the leadership roles in the 110th Congress, whereas many of the kind of folks who were able to defeat Republicans in local House races were much more conservative, new Democrats. And so whether or not across those kind of ideological and generational divides the new Democratic majority can hold, it remains to be seen. That said, they have the one thing that does tend to keep Democrats in line on voting behavior, which is to say they have a Republican president. So in other words, they have an outsider, they have an enemy, so that might certainly help to keep discipline in the 110th Congress.
If at least in this 2-year period going into 2008, if Nancy Pelosi and company stay away from issues such as gay rights and abortion and things like that, the Democrats will probably stay together.
Let me ask you about moments that seemed to explode in the faces of people who thought they were a good idea. The Terri Schiavo case, where you have a woman who was in a vegetative state, it was seen initially as an issue that Republicans could press, the sanctity of life in this case, even for a woman who was in a vegetative state. Here's a clip, though, from Democrat John Lewis.
We are playing with a young woman's life for the sake of politics. This is not about values. This is not about religion. It is pandering for political gain with the next election in mind.
Robert, with the next election in mind, I think the Republicans thought, oh, hey, we have a winner here. Did this explode in their face?
I think it did. And I think, interestingly enough, the two politicians that push this the most, Tom DeLay in the House and Bill Frist in the Senate, are both now no longer in Congress. Frist, of course, the then majority leader, had decided that he was not going to run. He was not going to run again. His plan had been to run for president. But I think he read the tea leaves correctly, given that they lost the majority and his leadership in a lot of issues was called into question, that he didn't really have a chance. And so he decided not even to run for president. So I think it's ironic that Terri Schiavo sort of put both Tom DeLay and Bill Frist into a permanent political vegetative state as a legacy of that attempt.
I want to ask you, Melissa, is there anything that the Democrats did individually or as a group that had a similar effect, something they thought was a home run but really turned out to be a very bad idea?
You know, it's interesting on the Democratic side, the ways in which they, you know, some sort of individual ethics violations ended up not working against them, in part because of the huge failures on the part of the federal government that angered constituents. So the big example of this is Representative Jefferson in Louisiana, who is, you know, right now dealing with the questions of ethics violations, the huge sums of cash that in marked bills that were found in his freezer, and who was returned to the U.S. Congress. And largely the press around this has been suggesting that voters, so angry about the federal response to Hurricane Katrina, felt that they wanted to return their congressperson, who they felt had stood up for them, had fought for them, even with some of these ethics violations hanging over their heads.
Let's turn to issues that affect people of color. You just mentioned Katrina. Melissa and then Robert, what are some of the other things that impacted people of color?
I have to say the bankruptcy law was at the center of what will affect working people and poor people who are disproportionately people of color, although certainly not exclusively. And, you know, the attack on the bankruptcy law at the same time that the Congress held on to tax cuts for the wealthy helped to really expose the ways in which this was not a legislative policy or agenda setters meant to really help out the American family. When Americans are faced with massive overburdening of personal debt, and they recognize that that is a result of the changing structure of the American economy and not just about poor spending choices, that their Congress would step in to make life harder for them while simultaneously easing the burden on the very wealthy in terms of taxes. I think this was the sort of policy that really helped put into stark relief for working people, for African Americans, for people of color, just how much this Congress was not on their side.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I also point to, while I disagree with the particular prescription, but I think that the issue of the minimum wage, when you put it in connection with Congress happily raising its own pay, had that similar kind of out-of-touch resonance. I think it became particularly effective in communities of color where pocketbook issues are going to be most hardest felt.
Robert, finally, minimum wage is one of these issues that's going to come back in the coming months in the next Congress.
In the first 100 hours, they say, according to the Democrats, exactly.
Exactly. So will Republicans get on board with an issue like this? And what should we look for from this Congress?
I would say that it's I'm not sure what the president is going to do in terms of signing it, but I think it's going to be it'll be a slam dunk in terms of it getting passed in both the House and the House and the Senate. You'll probably get a third to a half of the Republicans will be supportive of that. You might actually get bipartisan support for immigration reform, which will look more like what President Bush is looking for in terms of a comprehensive approach than what House Republicans wanted to do, which was just border enforcement. Beyond that, though, I think things will tend to break down on general party lines.
Melissa?
I do think there's a third issue, and that is largely called the green issue or the environmental issue. Democrats, I think, have identified that thinking about environmental justice, linking this up with our presence in the Middle East, and somehow really kind of framing the ways that this most recent Congress, 109th, under the guise of apparently making environmental policy, actually turned back the clock, turned back funding on a variety of questions of clean air and clean water, that to the extent that the Democrats have found green to be the new issue for them, they're going to push Republicans to have to get on board with passing some legislation around it.
You know, I'll have to agree with that. And in fact, you're starting to see Republicans looking at ways that the environment and job creation and economics actually start tying into each other. You're starting to see more Republicans getting involved in so-called green companies, as it were. And I think you're right. There's going to be there may actually be more areas of cooperation there between the two parties.
Eureka, we have found it.
Surprise.
Bringing the parties together.
Amazingly
one
enough,
issue at a time.
We're green means more than just money, exactly.
Right.
All right, on that note, Melissa and Robert, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Farai.
Melissa Harris Lacewell is Associate Professor of Political Science and African American Studies at Princeton University. Robert George is an editorial writer with the New York Post and was a senior writer for former House Speaker Newt Gingrich from 1995 to 1998.